We're talking today with Roy Lee Lindsay of the Oklahoma Pork Council. Roy Lee, let's talk about several things. First of all, as we approach this weekend, it is Labor Day weekend. This is the kind of the last of the trio of big holiday weekends that we always see a lot of grilling going on, and that makes it very, very important for the meat industry.
Sure, it does. You know, folks think about you think about going to the grill, and you're going to put burgers on the grill, or you're going to have hot dogs, or bratwursts, or other sausages, pork chops. You know, maybe you're going to smoke ribs this weekend. But it is a big time, and it's something I don't know that I really appreciated before I started at the Pork Council, how much product the meat industry really moves on. You know, Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th of July kind of weekends. We're blessed, I think, here in Oklahoma in that we can grill year-round. We can take advantage of that. So it may not be as big a stretch, if you will. We may not see it as the same giant weekend that you would in the Northeast or up in the Dakotas or something. But we also have football coming up, getting ready to kick off this weekend. And I know I can't tell you how many people I know that go to tailgates and bring along their grills and set up for the parties. But great opportunity for you to feature some really high-quality pork products on your tailgates, on your Labor Day grill out, whatever it may be. And lots of options and lots of people out there who can help you figure out the easiest way to do that. You can look at our website and find recipes there at okpork.org or at porkbeinspired.com. Lots of ways to get new tips and new exciting things. I love watching the Food Network and all the guys you see on there with barbecue this and barbecue that and all the different things, you grill masters and whatever it may be, but all the different tips and ideas and things you can pick up just from watching. And the best advice I can give anybody is just get out and try. Learn what you like best, and then you'll always have a meal that you enjoy because it'll be exactly what you want, not what somebody else thought you might like to have.
Obviously, we've had some worries about pork supplies, and supplies are obviously a little tighter because of much of anything PEDV. But we've still had pretty good movement, and we've had obviously adequate stocks of everything available to consumers. Haven't seen the empty store shelves or anything.
No, and we're not ever going to see empty store shelves. I mean, that's the function of price in the marketplace is when you start to really run short on something, the price will go up to the point that it naturally rations what the product is. As we look at PEDV, we've seen, you know, a pretty significant decrease in cases, new cases, very minimal over the summer. Most of the animal health experts said that was to be expected. The question for us is what's going to happen this fall. We get back into October, November, and it starts to cool down. Will this virus behave as similar viruses have, and we'll see a resurgence in new cases? We just don't know what that answer is yet, and we don't have a vaccine today that's a true preventative vaccine, if you will. So we're still struggling with what do we do? You're hoping to get some immunity from prior exposure and things like that. But after a 60-day, 90-day long, hot summer, are we back to naive animals who will react to the next time they're exposed just as it was the first time? Mm-hmm. And we just don't know what that answer is and won't know till we get into this fall.
I guess what the other thing about that, we really are still struggling to know exactly how it moves or how it can move.
Well, we have a better feel, I think, for the things that assisted with transmission. Number one, we know that farms that were in close proximity to one another, that this virus, very small, can attach itself to dust particles, can attach itself to people, to vehicles, to whatever. And it takes such a very small amount of this virus that once it's shared somewhere else, whether that's a farm that's down the road a quarter mile and the wind blew it down there, whether that's a truck that unloaded animals at your place and then came to mine, whatever it may be, we know better, we think, how we've spread some of it. How we got initial introduction, that we're still trying to figure out. But we know a little bit better how it was spread. And so we think with good biosecurity and proper management, we're getting a better handle on number of cases. Now, again, we learned all of this as we worked through the winter when we had cases everywhere. And now we get into the heat of the summer. And so are you attributing decline in cases to what we know and to better management? Or are you attributing decline in cases to the weather and what's out there? So that it's almost impossible to separate all the factors and isolate this is exactly what's causing the decline in cases. So we're going to just kind of have to watch and see. Our folks are very resilient. We've been dealing with diseases like PERS for years that really have an impact on productivity, and we've learned to manage for it. There's not a good vaccine, if you will, the PERS virus constantly mutating. And so we've learned to manage for disease better, and I think a lot of that management technique is being applied in these PED cases. You mentioned supply, and there are a couple of things going on here. Yes, we've got fewer hogs, but with cheaper corn, we're able to feed hogs to higher weights. And with empty barns, because we have fewer hogs, we can take hogs to higher weights. And so even though overall hog numbers are down significantly, the amount of pork being produced is only down a much smaller percentage. Mm-hmm. And I think the last numbers I saw were we were 6 or 8% down in hog numbers, but we were only down 2 to 3% in pork production. And the bulk of that is because we've been able to take hogs to higher weights. We can do that because we don't have another group of hogs coming along the chain, if you will. Because numbers are down, we've got empty barns, so we can keep pigs longer in the barns, and we've got cheaper corn. You know, if we were still dealing with $7, $8 corn, I don't know that you'd be seeing them feed these hogs to an extra 10 pounds, 20 pounds of market weight before they go. Mm-hmm. So that's allowed us to help maintain supply. Mm-hmm. Demand has been very good. Consumer demand in the United States has been very good. And export demand has been remarkable given where prices were this summer. So in that respect, it's been kind of one of those best of times, worst of times kind of things. Mm-hmm. Profitability has been very good as long as you personally didn't have PED, or as long as you had enough animals to spread that out so that you were still had market hogs going to market this summer and capturing some of that value. If you didn't have those things, then it was absolutely the worst of times if you had to deal with PED. And so it's kind of a trade-off as you work through that.
Right. And obviously time will tell on this virus.
Yeah. That's the best. The only solution or the only answer I've got for that question is we just got to wait and see what it does November, December. We saw the number of cases peak last year in January, February. That's when the number of new cases peaked. The other thing that's different this year is we do have the mandatory reporting program for PED, and there's a question about how is that going to impact reporting. You're required as a producer, as a veterinarian, if you discover that you've got PED, to report it to the state vet's office or to USDA. Does that mean that a farm that had it a year ago has got to report it again this year? I don't know that we know what all those answers are and how will that affect what the numbers tell us. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be a new dynamic as well this fall, is how does reporting, what will reporting tell us, and is it accurately reflecting what's going on in the field?
A couple of outside factors also you're paying a lot of attention to, I know right now. Top of mind for a lot of folks in the livestock industry is what WTO is going to say regarding country of origin labeling. We should know sometime here in the month of September that what they actually have told Canada, Mexico, and U.S. already.
Yeah, you know, the reports are out. Wall Street Journal last week citing anonymous sources that WTO's ruled against the United States again. This would be the second time they've ruled against us on country of origin labeling, and it's a challenge for us. You know, that disagreement of what do consumers want to know and need to know, and what do we have to do that complies with what our trade agreements are? You know, we're a big exporter of pork today around the world. And we're working diligently to negotiate new trade agreements with the Trans-Pacific Partnership and even talking about a new agreement possibly with the European Union. But the first of those trade agreements really was NAFTA. And what we find very clearly, WTO's told us twice now, we think, at least once we know for sure, and we're being told the second time as well, that our country of origin labeling law does not comply with our NAFTA trade agreement. Well, if it doesn't comply, you know, I find it very difficult to rationalize not following what you say you're going to do. You know, we raise cane with other countries when they won't follow what the trade agreements say. They delist plants, or they add tariffs, or they shut down the border, or whatever it may be. And then we jump up and down and go, wait a minute, we have a trade agreement that says you're going to do XYZ. And then here we are dealing with country of origin labeling that the World Trade Body says doesn't comply with what our free trade agreements are, and we want to thumb our nose at that. I mean, you know, it's kind of trying to teach my 8-year-old, we don't selectively enforce the rules. The rules are the rules, and we all have to live by them. And so that's kind of, you know, that's how I see this country of origin labeling piece. We've got to figure out how to get it fixed. I don't know what that right fix is. There's been some discussion about, you know, why didn't we fix it in the Farm Bill and the rest of it. And quite honestly, we really don't care why we didn't fix it in the Farm Bill. The fact remains that we're going to likely be dealing with a negative situation, retaliation from two of our biggest trading partners on pork. Mexico is our number one market for volume of pork products around the world. So increases in tariffs going into Mexico, tremendous impact on Oklahoma, on the pork industry around the country. And it won't just be pork that gets slapped with this deal. It won't just be beef that gets slapped with this. They're going to apply it to apples and to other products. There'll be manufactured goods. There's a reason that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and that the National North American Manufacturers Association, whatever, the Manufacturers Association has all said, we got to fix this problem. And it's just because, hey, we said we were going to do something. Now we've got to live up to what we said we were going to do. And when they start putting tariffs on products that don't have anything to do with country of origin labeling, maybe that'll be enough to kick some people off high center and get this thing fixed.
I guess what? It'll be probably 2015, the new Congress that'll have to address this, as that'll be when, if indeed they've ruled against us, it'll be sometime next year before we'll finally get the final deal after a final appeal.
Yeah, well, yeah, could it be appealed again? It sure could be. I mean, that's part of the challenge that's out there. But the retaliation lists are out. I mean, you can see what Canada has said it's going to retaliate on. Same, I don't know if Mexico's is available or not, but I know you've seen Canada's. And they've been very plain that, hey, you're either going to fix this or we're going to make it hurt when it comes to trade. And so, you know, again, it goes back to, I told you we were going to do something. Now I need to live up to what my word was. And that's what those free trade agreements are. And it's awful hard, I think, for us to stand and pound on the table on TPP and on others that, hey, you got to live up to what you've said you're going to do if we're not willing to do the same thing here.